So just to expand on what you were talking about before the music break, I wanted to ask what are some of the reasons queer and trans folks are more likely to end up in incarceration?
Because queer and trans young people are disproportionately homeless, folks engage in what's considered survival crimes, sex work or petty theft or drug dealing, things like that, and then are targeted because of that. Gender nonconforming folks can often be arrested simply for walking down the street doing nothing. This is consistent in major cities, New York City, happens here in Boston on the regular, LA. There's just so many examples of folks being targeted simply because of their gender nonconforming presence in a city. Cops take that as a suggestion of deviance and a suggestion of criminality, and then people can get arrested, and then they're picked up for something unrelated, or charged with something unrelated for disturbing the peace or committing some other minor misdemeanor or felony that they end up pleading out to and having to do their time. People, queer and trans folks, are disproportionately impacted because of the lack of support that lawyers are giving to queer and trans folks, that so many lawyers don't know what they're doing already to advocate for people, and then when they are working with someone they know even less about, they're less willing to take the time and energy to support them. The system itself, we have things like mandatory minimums that just keep people over and over longer and longer in prison, and three strikes laws, things like that, that get people stuck. And so when you are already marginalized in a society, you have less options for employment, you have less options for housing. There's still completely legal discrimination in housing for queer and trans folks through most of the United States. And again, I apologize for that. My knowledge is based almost exclusively in what's happening in the United States. But we have this consistent targeting of folks who are simply trying to survive. So if you're living on the street, there's a criminalization of homelessness. Folks who can't afford hormones can get arrested for having, stolen prescriptions and things like that in order to simply, take care of their bodies. They're getting street drugs to do what they want to do and need to do for their own bodies. So these, because of racism, queers of color are regularly targeted through just the police racially profiling folks, incarcerating people, because the system is just set up to keep people incarcerated and not to make it so that people can be based in their communities. People end up pleading out to get less time because they're too concerned, rightfully so, of getting convicted with very little evidence and doing much longer sentences. So we end up being incarcerated because we have such a lack of support in our communities to support each other.
Wow. Well, I guess on that note, where do you see kind of queer and trans communities and stuff like that, but also where do you see queer resistance, the prison industrial complex, going in the next year? And where do you see that kind of heading in the future, as well as what can a queer resistance to the prison industrial complex really look like?
I was at the U.S. Social Forum the short couple months ago now, or a month and a half ago, whatnot now. And it is amazing to see how many people are beginning to prioritize queer and trans folks within the prison industrial complex. At Critical Resistance, the 10-year anniversary conference that happened in California, there were so many folks talking about the need to include queer and trans folks at the forefront, specifically trans women of color and low-income trans women specifically, who are so disproportionately targeted, at the priority place because of the rates of violence that people are experiencing while locked up. So I think that there's a visibility happening that has never happened before. I think that folks are remembering that during the first gay pride marches in New York City, they always went by the prisons and the jails and stopped outside because there was a commitment and an understanding that queer and trans folks were targeted by the police, and thus the jail was a place where we are disproportionately held. And so there's an understanding of that. I think some of that is coming back. I think that one thing that's happening is a lot of knowledge is being shared. I'm really excited about a couple of books coming out in the next 2 years. One that's all about trans, excuse me, and gender nonconforming folks in the prison industrial complex that Eric Stanley and Chris Vargas are pulling together. There's Andrea Ritchie and another couple of folks are bringing out a book out of Beacon Press about the criminalization of LGBT people. So there's information in the academic sense that's coming out. I think that we do need to be careful about the over-academic nature of the abolitionist movement at times. We need to look at the concrete things. The organizations, again, like the Sylvia Rivera Law Project is doing amazing things. The trans, gender nonconforming, intersex prison project in San Francisco is doing amazing work, led by Miss Major, who is just an amazing organizer, really rooted in a grassroots community movement, that there are folks developing more of an analysis around prison industrial complex in regular queer organizing in some major cities. The Audre Lorde Project is creating the Safe Outside the System Project, which really works to create alternatives to the police and how we deal with situations of violence in our own communities. They're based in New York City. The Communities United Against Violence in San Francisco is also doing similar work, which I just think is a really exciting movement-building capacity for us to say, we don't need the police. The police hurt us and harm us. We need to turn to other things. The critique of hate crimes legislation that is continuing to come out of low-income communities, communities of color, and white anti-racist folks saying that hate crimes legislation only hurts us, doesn't help us, I think is a really good analysis that's continuing to grow. Unfortunately, it's not getting to the mainstream, but it is at least being out there as a conversation piece that we need to do things differently. We need to create our community-based alternatives and not rely on the state and not rely on criminalization to so-called save us or help us. So there's everything is continuing to grow, and I think that part's really exciting.
That's amazing to hear.
Yeah.
There's just so many projects I haven't heard about or checked out yet, but it's really inspiring to hear so much work happening.
In totally different places.
Yeah.
So we have one more. How can queer and trans folks support our community within the prison wall?
I think that writing to folks is essential. Knowing who is on the inside. I think one of the pieces I apologize for not mentioning in the last question is you talked about what resistance is happening on the inside. I think listening to queer and trans prisoners who are surviving and who are suing the state and who are suing the Department of Corrections here, there, and everywhere, I think is a vital part of this. Looking into some of our history, in the 1970s in the northwest of the United States, there was an organization called Men Against Sexism that was started by Ed Mead, who was a white anti-racist political prisoner. And they basically stopped all forms of sexual violence happening in Walla Walla Prison for a couple of years, which was just incredible, by militantly taking over and supporting queer and trans folks who were locked up. That was in the 70s. But knowing our history, I think, is so vital, and knowing what prisoner resistance has happened and connecting with prisoners who are resisting right now. I think that black and pink art is really exciting to see what art prisoners are creating and supporting that, purchasing their art, and then also getting to know the person who created your art, because creating while in such a toxic, violent environment is amazing and shows such resiliency that is beautiful and inspiring. So connecting to that, I think, is vital. People need to prioritize the voices of prisoners at pride parades. I think that queer and trans folks who understand that abolition and that the prison industrial complex as a whole needs to be discussed, need to continuously be writing to their city gay newspapers or whatnot, and really making this a priority issue, pushing organizations to understand that queer and trans prisoners are a vital part of our community. Simply just talking about the prison system is going to help us move forward with that. I think that writing letters, getting to know folks on the inside, and then joining in on whatever other prison justice work is happening, not only working with queer and trans folks, but working with anybody and everyone who is resisting the state violence system, working with indigenous communities who are trying to create alternatives of their own native courts to use their own traditional community-based ways of taking care of issues in their own communities. Supporting folks who are trying to abolish the death penalty, but also being clear that life in prison without possibility of parole is also death. And so not turning to that, but pushing the boundaries, using our queer identities as a way of saying, we already push boundaries, so let's continue to push boundaries. and turning to that to help build and strengthen our movement and to help build and strengthen the anti-prison movement as a whole. Also understanding that the police, the courts, the lawyers, the privatized prison system, that the prison industrial complex is far more than just the prisons and jails that lock people up. It is the entire system of corporate collusion with government interests and the media playing all together and resisting all of that, resisting the turning to this state system for any kind of protection, create community-based alternatives to dealing with domestic violence in our communities, get communities of folks to say, we will not call the police for any reason, for anything, ever, and here's how we're going to deal with these issues instead, work to decriminalize drugs. All of these things that are larger issues are queer issues because we are continuously being targeted by them, and that ends up incarcerating our communities and understanding that this must be an anti-racist struggle rooted in communities of color. For myself as a white person, I understand this as an anti-racist struggle that I do as an ally. So keeping that as a priority, I think, is essential.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you so much for talking with us.
Really appreciate it.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention, or any websites, or anything you'd like to plug before we let go of you?
For folks who are in Canada, definitely connect with the Prison Correspondence Project. Get online and email them to get a pen pal through them if you can. For folks in the United States, you can connect with us, blackandpink.org, get a pen pal with us. Write to folks, get to know people. And then also turn to your community. Really look inside your community. What work is already being done? Join an organization. Don't start a new one. We don't need new and more organizations, really. We need to fix the ones we already have. To get connected and understand that abolition is not just a pipe dream, it is a concrete utopia that we are working towards.